Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee from Prevent Connect, and I'm talking with Joan Tabachnik, who has recently written for the National Sexual Violence Resource Center a booklet called Engaging Bystanders in Sexual Violence Prevention, and will soon be the editor of their blog about bystander intervention. So good afternoon, Joan.
Good afternoon, David.
Great to have you here. This book that was put together, Engaging Bystanders in Sexual Violence Prevention, is really helpful for really giving people an orientation to understanding bystander approaches. So I really appreciate that you have worked with the National Sexual Violence Resource Center in putting this together. Can you talk about why you see bystanders as a real promising approach to prevention of sexual violence?
The term bystander, a lot of people have an issue with, and I think partly because, you know, that was really a term which is based on the research, and it's based on the research about why people, you know, don't act. And what this book is about, and what I think is so encouraging about, is that this is sort of beginning to turn that around and say, really, what needs to change, and what can we do to encourage people to do something or to say something? And I think it plays into something which I, you know, personally have seen in my career, which is that I think to really turn this around, to really find an opening, people need to have a sense of hope. And I've learned that from, really, I think at this point, probably hundreds of interviews I've done with offenders, with survivors, and with family members. And I think around bystanders, it really gives people a sense of hope that we can say something, we can do something, and we can intervene probably much earlier than certainly when it's unsafe. But there are many, many opportunities to intervene. And I think that gives really a very different opportunity than when we look at only the tertiary prevention, you know, after the abuse has been perpetrated.
From a prevention perspective, I think the bystander is so helpful because if we approach our audience as potential victims, there's a risk of some victim blaming that can go on. And who wants to engage in that way? Who wants to admit the potential vulnerabilities? And if we approach our audience as potential perpetrators, once again, there's a risk of falling into blame and shame, and who wants to talk that way? But when we talk about how you can do something by being an active bystander or an engaged bystander, I agree with you. I think that's an opportunity for some hope and for action, and it really gives a direction that I think in a non-stigmatized way people can move forward.
You know, the way I sometimes think about it is that usually when we start talking about bystanders, people think immediately of the violent rape, or they might think of someone, you know, screaming a child or a partner at the checkout counter in the grocery store. And, you know, those are not the safe places to intervene. And in each of those situations, there's usually many more situations along the way that you can intervene before you get to that place. So I try to think about it as more like the situations like, you know, if you're at a wedding and your cousin is commenting on how all the adolescent girls are really hot in your family. Say to your cousin, maybe that's not respectful and that's not okay with you. That doesn't model good behavior for the rest of the boys in your family. However you want to say that. But that's the point where there, to me, is the potential for us to articulate a new way to talk about sexual violence prevention at those earlier stages along this continuum around modeling really what's safe and what's appropriate, what's healthy.
In the book, Engaging Bystanders in Sexual Violence Prevention, you show a continuum of behaviors that we can see. Another piece that I see and that I think is very helpful is you talk about five steps toward taking action. Can you talk about what those five steps are?
This is based on the research of Latane and Darley, who did some of the initial research around bystander intervention based on a case that happened in New York City in the 60s. And it shows really how complex the decision is to say something or do something. And I keep using both say or do. There's been some research which has shown that, in general, men are much more likely to do something and women are much more likely to say something. And so as we think about interventions, to think about both what can be done verbally and what can be done in terms of our actions. And the five steps are really basically the first thing, you have to sort of notice the event. You have to recognize that, in fact, something's happening. And that's something which people in our field are much more attuned to. I know that if I go to a video arcade, I'm looking something very, very different than if I'm going with just a friend who's never done any work in this field. We are more attuned to the issue. So first you have to notice something. If you do notice it, you have to decide if that situation demands some sort of action of some kind. If you say yes to both of those, do you need to act? The fourth decision is, do I know what to do? Equally important is, do I know how to do it? So if I can say yes to all five of those actions, then I'm more likely to to do something and say something. And when you think it in that context, mostly when you see a situation, you know, your decision process has to be fairly quick. So there's a lot of conversation, a lot of training, there's a lot of modeling that needs to happen to get people to be able to go through all five of those decisions very quickly. And that may seem impossible. We've done that on so many other issues. And I think that, you know, certainly we can go through a lot of those, but I think we can begin to get people to start recognizing situations, knowing what to do and knowing how to do it.
Now, in the in this, I really appreciate that you look at the ecological model of doing bystander programs and recognize that if we want to make changes and do prevention around bystanders, it's not just about working with individuals. It's mm-hmm. also about trying to be able to look on all levels of the ecological model, the individual relationship, community, and society level, to be able to really effectively create a milieu that really engages bystanders.
It speaks to me what's a really essential part of the bystander idea is that we're not alone. Even what I see is important about taking that initial research that you just pointed out about the five steps, even though it's all framed at what I can do, I like to sort of actually try to reframe that and start thinking about what we can do. Certainly what we can do, you know, as individuals, but what we can do also as communities and what we can do, you know, as society. One way that sort of translates is that sometimes, like, as you go through those lists, you might not be able to do something, but you may know somebody else who can do something. So speaking to that person is also an action. You know, if you're within family, within a community, living in a church or college, there are certain policies that can be put into place that can also encourage people to act. And I was at a conference recently with the Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers, and one of the studies that was done of offenders that showed that there's a number of situations where offenders, even if they had abused, would no longer abuse. I'm thinking of this one case where this man had worked with a youth-serving organization, and he had sexually abused a child within one, moved to another organization, did not abuse within that one, and moved to a third one and abused again. And in that second organization, they had a number of policies, they had active supervision. So it really shows, going back to what you're saying about the ecological model, is that we need to, as individuals, we need to think about what needs to be done, but we need to think about what we can do within all those different ecological levels and the community level, society level, to encourage people to act, encourage people to put in policies in place that will prevent people from abusing.
When we go to conferences, we often get that sheet of paper that mm-hmm. says safety hints, and all of them tend to be don't do this, don't do that, and very individual focused. You challenged and said, why don't we focus on how we can play a role as being active bystanders and to be involved, and how can we work on trying to promote the safety of other people as opposed to shifting the burden onto the individual? And I think that was really telling to what promise the bystander approach gives to really make prevention of sexual violence be something that's not about holding victims accountable for protecting themselves, but being mm-hmm. part of a community that says that we want people to be safe and live in healthy ways.
It's a very simple shift. If you're at a conference in a city, don't go out and walk alone. And the conference changed their policy for the next year, and it changed it to not to walk alone. And if you see somebody from the conference who is walking alone, invite them to join you. That emphasizes that sense of community and that we have a responsibility, not just for our own safety, but for each other's safety as well.
Here at Prevent Connect, we do look at ourselves as a community of people committed to prevention of sexual violence and intimate partner violence. And as part of that community, we're really have a wonderful resource that you're going to be editing, and that's going to be a blog on bystanders on the National Sexual Violence Resource Center website, www.nsvrc.org. And can you describe what you're planning to do with this blog?
This is where I feel like I should begin to say that I'm over 50, and I'm not quite sure what I'm doing. What I hope to do with the blog, and certainly what I've seen other people do, is not just have a chance for it to be a forum for me, but also begin to sort of create a sense of exchange of ideas, of suggestions, and of stories. In particular, what I've seen where I think we don't do, especially around bystanders, is we don't celebrate actions that are taken. Sometimes we don't do it because the actions that we're taking were not enough to stop the sexual violence. That sort of is what makes a story into the news. But I think it's really important to be celebrating what we have done, how we have shifted things, where people have spoken up, and we're literally know nothing happened because of that. I think that's equally exciting for us to begin to talk about. So I'm hoping that I can begin to, through guest bloggers, have people share their experiences, people share their research, and begin to put a different kind of focus on this. If one out of four of us are sexually abused, it's the other three of us who need to learn how to talk about this. I'm hoping this begins to give the forum for all of us to talk together in the same way that you're creating this amazing sense of community with Prevent Connect.
Thank you very much. I really look forward to following and joining in on the blog around bystanders, and this will be at the National Sexual Violence Resource Center's website, www.nsvrc.org. Thank you, Joan, for joining us today. It was a real pleasure to be able to talk with you, and look forward to seeing you online in the next coming months.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.